Hello and welcome to Rolling Intentions. My name is Jason. Today on the podcast we have a guest, James Klasnetvedt, and of Broken World as the game you created, is right?
Right. Hi.
Hello. So, first of all, the first time I heard about it was on our last interview with Bob Richardson, Spirit of 77 right. guy. Do you happen to know Bob, like, personally or something? Or?
Not personally. He is a member of the same community site I'm from, and he saw my work and decided to plug it a bit, which is super nice of him, and I've seen his project before, the Spirit of 77. It looks really fantastic, and I'm really impressed with their presentation.
Yeah, we actually did a full playthrough. Now, it's not out yet, so all you people...
Right, yeah.
But we did it. It'll be eventually out after the Dream Askew stuff. That's really cool. So I said I got to check this out, and I heard you got a Kickstarter, so this is all like the perfect time to do it. So here we are. All right. I haven't played the game. I'm probably going to, because it just sounds cool. To learn a little bit more about you and your inspirations behind making all this, so, like, tell me a little bit about your role-playing history. Like, where'd you start and such?
Growing up, I was the younger brother, so that's how I, of course, got into role-playing. You see your older brother playing with all his friends, and they say no, and then that makes you want to play even more, right?
Of course.
So, they started out playing Dungeons and Dragons, and that's what got me interested. I never played it very much because I wasn't allowed to, but once I got older, I found my own group, and I got started on a system called GURPS. I don't know if you've heard of that one. Probably.
Oh, yeah, GURPS, yeah, of course.
And so that I liked GURPS quite a lot because it was you could be more creative with the character creation, and that's something that turned me off of D&D was how restrictive it was. You're playing these races, you're playing these classes, and that was never for me, really. So I really enjoyed GURPS because just of how in-depth you could get, how micromanaging you could with your characters, and that was the big appeal for me.
Yeah, it's a huge system. It's humongous, right?
I mean, it's huge, yeah.
Yeah, they say that people who are able to master GURPS are actually mathematicians.
Right.
Because of the vastness of it, right?
So I played that for a long time in high school. And then afterwards, you move and you drift apart from your group. I played GURPS for a bit. I played a lot of sort of custom systems. Online, so I had friends through IRC, and we'd get together, once or twice a week, and play like a custom system. And the more I played, the further I kind of went towards more freeform gaming, where it's more about the storytelling and the adventure than it is about the rules and the dice rolling. You know, eventually got to a point where we weren't even rolling dice; we were just talking. But I love rolling dice, so I wanted to step a bit back from that.
So you kept some of the dice rolls in there, hey?
Yeah. I've got a huge dice collection here, so they felt neglected. After that, I was introduced to Dungeon World through a group on IRC. And I just loved the system after playing it. Just once, I played it, and the things we did and how much fun we had and how hard I laughed was just, like, I never experienced that in another role-playing game, you know? And it seems like Dungeon World is a system where it really is built around achieving those great moments from D&D that you had to work hard for and just making that every single game.
Yeah.
So that's why I love Dungeon World. That's where that's the most the systems I've played, Dungeon World, D&D, GURPS. Those were the ones that I'm inspired by.
That's the three main ones, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised at how popular Dungeon World's been getting, actually. It seems like it blipped up on the radar and exploded.
Yeah, well, I did had a chat to, Adam Corbell and Sage Latora, right, the guys who made it a while back. Yeah, it was like when I first heard about the game myself, I was sort of like kind of going, "Huh, that's very interesting." Because I mean, it's got all the aspects of Dungeon World, of D&D, but it's put into a type of game that I wouldn't have expected at first. Because honestly, the original, you know, Apocalypse World, where it came from. Right. When I play it, I don't feel like I'm playing Apocalypse World. So it's like, right.
It is really different, isn't it?
Yeah, it is very different, yeah. So which is why, like, which brings us to your game, Broken right. World, which is got some aspects of Dungeon World put into it, but it's, you know, it's a post-apocalyptic era. So, first of all, Broken World, was that the first name that you came up with originally, or was there other names, like code names you probably used at the beginning to kind of...
Oh, there was a whole big list.
Yeah.
Basically, I went through, must have been, you know, 20 or 30 different names. A lot of it was making seeing what wasn't already used. I wanted to stick with the world ending. I know my system is going to be standalone and pretty unique, but I know that I'm going to shoot myself in the foot if I don't get at least some recognition in there. So I wanted to go with a world ending. And I thought Broken World really captured the feel of my setting.
Yeah, I do feel like it's more of a homage thing than like, oh, this is a ripoff of another game. Because
right.
I've seen a bunch of like different world games, and every time I play another one, like Spirit 77 is another one, and Monster Hearts, when I played those games, I didn't feel like I was playing Apocalypse World. It was an entirely different game, right? Yeah.
So it seems like more of a, I don't know, like it's not really, like, the name isn't really anything to do with the system. It's more just like, it's like a club almost, you know, like this is...
The World Club.
The World Club, yeah. I know it sets off a lot of red flags for people when they see a world on the end of it. They're like, oh, here's just another cash grab ripoff of Apocalypse World or Dungeon World or... hopping on the bandwagon, but it really is. There's so many creative people that are coming forward with their own ideas, and I think a lot of that is because of just the spirit of the original makers. Like Apocalypse World and Dungeon World both have their Creative Commons licenses, and they really encourage community involvement and feedback and their own creations, and I think that's what's really spurring all this you know, all these little ones popping up, all these new worlds popping up, because just carrying that torch forward, all the creative spirit, and you know, the free, just the free, you know,
like the freedom of doing whatever you want with this without having to worry about legal actions against you later on.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. And I think some of the best work comes apart from that. You know, when you can build up other people's stuff and really bring your own creations to light that way.
Well, that's Linux. Right? But yeah, exactly. So, yeah, no, that's great. So we've talked about what games inspired you to create the game, but what inspired you to create your own?
I started playing Dungeon World, and my favorite setting, hands down, is post-apocalypse. I love the death. I think a close second is sci-fi, but given the chance, post-apocalypse all the way. You know, I really love games like Fallout, and I love all the movies like Mad Max, and I decided I wanted to play Dungeon World, but I wanted to play in a post-apocalypse setting because that's what I really loved, and I had friends who also wanted to do that as well. So I just started making my own playbooks for Dungeon World, and I decided to make some post-apocalypse ones. And I just had so much fun doing it. Like, well, I'm having so much fun making these playbooks for maybe I'll just make my own system, you know, just keep going with it. And part of that is just, you know, my own desire to create things because it's just what I love to do. And why not start with this, right? But another part of that is just because, well, I'm playing, there's certain things I think, like, you know, I wish this was a little different, or I wish this worked a bit better for what I want to do, and that's kind of what spurs me to make my own system. When I get certain situations where Dungeon World just isn't quite what I need, so that's why I kind of wanted to start with Dungeon World, but I'm gonna build my own system with this Kickstarter.
Excellent. Well, it looks like you're already well ahead there. Just looked at the numbers earlier, and it seems like you're doing good there now.
yeah, not bad, but
yeah, totally. I'm sure everybody else is on the wagon as well with you. A lot of people probably haven't heard of Broken World, and probably people who listen to this podcast have probably heard different variations and what makes different games special. So, what we want to know is tell us what makes your game special, or just tell us about the game in general. What would be like your ideal elevator pitch to somebody who probably never heard of this, or even this? I'm a D&D player. I've never heard of these, narrative games or any games that are story based. So sell me on this for your game. That kind of example.
All right. Well, every time that you've watched a post-apocalypse movie or played a role-playing game and you've laughed your ass off until it hurts, that's what I want every single session to be. I want to take all the fun camp of the post-apocalypse, I want to take all of the cool punk style, and I want to cram that into one experience that you can deliver every single week. And that's what I really want from Broken World.
Okay. It's pretty simple. So, I have a question, though, for you. Okay. All right.
Sure.
I was in the era that cyberpunk was a big thing, okay? There was a movie coming out. I think there was one with Mick Jagger in it. And Eraser, I don't remember. But anyways, so...
Right.
So, like, this type of thing appeals to me, right? It's post-apocalyptic. Mm-hmm. In the same sense, cyberpunk wasn't really post-apocalyptic, but it's same sort of genre-ish.
Dystopian
type of world,
gritty.
Right?
Yeah.
How does it fit in that? How would I be able to use this in that type of setting?
Cyberpunk?
Yeah, curious. I'm curious for myself.
Like, if you wanted to add cyberpunk to the setting, it'd be pretty easy. I was writing the classes for this game. There's six base classes that I have right now, and that's I have the Drifter, I have the Scout, I have the Muscle, Salvager, Medic, and Cultist. But originally the Muscle was Cyborg. Mm. And it actually worked quite well. I just felt that Cyborg is a bit too specific for a base class. So I decided to move that to a compendium class for later on. If you're a muscle and you want to start modifying yourself and getting technology, then you have that option. So really, like, it's all in the flavor that the GM chooses. You know, like, if you want to have characters be able to do that, if you want to have interesting like aspects to the game, like in playtesting, my roommate ran some sessions. And we're still using Dungeon Roll as the base right now. But he ran that there were computers in the wasteland that people had collected. And there was one character called the Cybermancer, I believe. And he had connected all the networks together, and he was controlling everything remotely. And I thought that was a really cool, really cool aspect to the game. Really, really neat integration of something, cyberpunky into a very, desolate wasteland setting. So it's all whatever you want to put in.
Yeah, well, I'm sort of bringing it up because Netrunner is a card game, and it's sort of getting more popularity, and it's kind of based on a cyberpunk type of idea.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so that's cool. So I got to talk about the artwork here. So where'd you get the artwork? You did it yourself, right? Or what? That's awesome.
I'm the artist. Yeah.
Yeah, really. All right.
That's what I do professionally. I'm a freelance illustrator. Cool. What I'm doing here with the Kickstarter is that this Kickstarter isn't to pre-order the book. This Kickstarter is to fund the book, because obviously, as a freelance illustrator, I can't afford time. I have no free time. It's all work to keep afloat. That's how art world is. So I just really wanted to do. I really wanted to do this. This is something I really want to do. I want to take a break from random illustration work to just sit down and do something I really love and really want to work on. And so that's what this Kickstarter is for. It's to fund the whole thing. And I thought that, you know, I'm an illustrator. That's what I do. So I'm gonna make it more worthwhile for people. You know, people might be a bit wary about backing a project where, you know, there's nothing to play yet, right? So what I wanted to do is I say, okay, well, there isn't a game yet. I'm working on that. That's what this Kickstarter is to fund for me to develop this game. So I'm going to make this an art book as well. So that's what the physical book is going to be, is just a big, beautiful art book with as much illustration in it as possible.
So yeah, okay. So I'm sold on that. And I did see the art itself. And when I've seen it, though, okay. So, all right. A little bit of a wonder here. It was kind of like a fun sort of looking post-apocalyptic. It was like a little bit of humor, a little bit of like, oh, what's this? You know, it's all cute kind of thing. Is that sort of the idea of the game itself? Like, for instance, Dungeon World has the same kind of artwork in a sense. It looks very fun. It looks kind of like, you know, very adventurous. They're doing heroic things. But like a game like Apocalypse World, very dark, very goth, very like... Right. You know, that sort of atmosphere. And when you play those games, the artwork is very good at describing what you're expecting.
Right.
You know? So are we going to be expecting the same thing with Broken World?
Yeah, I think that my artwork is pretty representative of the setting. Definitely Apocalypse World, very edgy, very gritty.
Yeah.
And I'm going more for quirky, you know, fun. A lot of my artwork could be described as cute, but the real feel I want is just fun and you know I want to have the setting just for adventure and exploration. So I want to give a big sense of there's a lot out there. It's very interesting, a lot to see, and that's what I want the game to be like.
Cool.
So I would say the art's very representative of that.
Very awesome. All right. All right. We've played some games like it. So, short term or long term, what are you going to say your game would be? There are some games, like for instance, Dungeon World can be both. So what would your game feel like if someone was coming into this? Would they be like feeling like we'll be able to play this game for 4 years with the same characters, or are we going to feel like this is a game that we can do short term and have different adventures and then cycle on with other adventures with different characters or whatnot? Like, what's the longevity of like sitting down and playing a single character?
I would say both. You know, it's good for short sessions, definitely. Part of the appeal of the Dungeon World system is that it's easy to jump into, easy for new players to kind of pick up and make a character really quickly and just go. Definitely good for short sessions. For long sessions, one of the complaints I've heard with Dungeon World is that longevity isn't as easy as some games. I think that's mostly in part with the way the character creation is that it works on the move system, and then eventually you're just running out of moves, right? But I feel like that there's ways around that, definitely with Dungeon World. And with my system, I'm going to add a lot of interesting game stuff. One of the systems in my game is going to be mutation, and that's something that really makes playing for a while rewarding, because the whole landscape is hazardous and toxic and radiated, and the longer you play, the more mutated your characters get.
Neat.
So actually, I hit the stretch goal to increase that. But so at levels 1, 5, and 10, you gain a mutation. And because of the stretch goal, it means at levels 5 and 10, the mutations are going to be significantly more impactful and more powerful. So once you get to level 10, you've got... You're a horrible freak, but...
of course.
You're kicking butt.
Nice.
There's definitely going to be a lot in there that really rewards continued long play.
Cool. That's great. Once again, like some games are long term, some games are better short term, right? I mean, it's just the way it is. You know. And I'm glad to hear that there's content for both people. And that's I think that was a key thing with Dungeworld, was the fact that I played Dungeworld and I felt like, hey, I can complete an entire session and kind of run out of... And the players were running out of steam, because they're always doing something epic. They're always doing something over the top. So at what point is it like, okay, we're done. Right? Yeah. We just defeated the big bad monster guy in like 5 or 6 sessions. What's next? We could go on to the universe or something, but let's just call it quits and make new characters, right?
Game break.
Exactly, right? Remember, games like Dungeon World are kind of like, at the 5th session, you're kind of like, all right, so now we get to play the game, right? Because there's a lot of like story development that has to go into the, you know, there's just a lot of crap. But there's never a game that fits in the middle, it doesn't seem. So doing that, I think, is very difficult. And it was good that you're doing that. So what is have you been thinking about any sort of supplement? You've just mentioned one about Mutation. Is that like a supplement book, or is that just something you're putting together
with be built the original the system?
Oh, that's going to build the system.
So, like I said, I'm not going to be using Dungeon World in the end. I'm carrying a lot of it forward just because I think so much of it works really well for what I want to do.
Yep.
But I am going to be rewriting quite a lot of it just to work particularly for my setting.
Sure.
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. What sort of supplements were you thinking of, kind of? What would you produce outside of your main core book? I know that you haven't started, really. You haven't really got into the deep rules or anything like that. But even the future site of like writing the first letter on the piece of paper, you're kind of thinking, hey, what's next? You know. So is there any sort of content you're thinking, after I'm done, this might be interesting?
Definitely whatever I don't hit stretch goals for. I've put a lot of content in the stretch goals that I really want to work on, and I'm not sure if I'm going to hit them or not. I might hit the next goal, the 1250, or the 12,500 goal. That's the chapter with resources for settlement building, and that's the one. I want there to be something for everybody in this, a little bit for everybody. I know I've always had players who love building the home base and micromanaging a little town, things like that, world building. And so I really want stuff in there for them too. And that's why I put that stretch goal in there. I might hit it. It looks like I might before the end of the goal. I've still got 5 days to go, and we're doing pretty good. So I may hit that. But the one after that is GM resources. And that's going to be a lot of stuff that the GM can use for ideas for games. I think that's something that's important because, you know, if you pick up the book, you might not know how to get into it right away. And that's why I really wanted some example stuff in there. But it just was too much work to promise without enough money to kind of fund that work time. So that'll probably be something I work on.
Oh, cool. So like a book of pitches and stuff, like ideas and
stuff? Like a GM resource book that you can add on.
That's really cool. All
right. Although if I do hit that goal, then I'd love to just put it in the main book.
Yeah, who knows, right? So what has been your biggest obstacles thus far?
Just my general newness to Kickstarter and you know, this whole business. Like, I've always been... very creative, very talented, but, you know, as soon as you get into just doing it, there's so many things you didn't even think of, right? Like, my biggest obstacle has to have been the price point. It's turned a lot of potential backers off because, you know, people look at it and it's in Canadian dollars, so it looks like it's more, first of all. People are so used to seeing the USD that they go, oh, geez, but it's actually like, you know, $10 cheaper than that. And then because it's going to be a really big, thick, you know, fully illustrated book, art book, my print price is a lot higher than, say, people doing supplement Dungeon World books would be. And that's why, you know, there's been a lot of competition on Kickstarter lately, a lot of new games popping up. And so when people look at my price point, it's a bit of a deterrent. And I can understand that. And it's not a big deal. I understand anybody who doesn't get it now can pick it up once I'm done. This is definitely just to fund the book. So as long as I make it, I'm happy. This is going to be my baby for the next half a year. So
It's a lot of work. I mean, I've been talking to people. Most of the people, actually, that we've been talking to have been using Kickstarter or other, like, cloud funding for their games, right?
Right.
Indiegogo and such, right? So, I mean, it's huge. It's a huge amount of work. So, yeah, good luck to all that, for sure.
Thank you.
So, playing the system, have you guys got around to any sort of or when are you expecting a beta?
It's tough to say, really. What I'm doing at a certain price point, I think it was the $20 price point, is when all the backers get beta access. And my plans for that is I want to be as transparent as I can with the development, because obviously I'm going to know, and I don't have previous experience in the industry to back me up here. And that's what really drives a lot of these Kickstarters, is saying, I worked on this, so you know this is going to be good. So really, to offset that, my plan is to be as transparent as possible. I'm going to set up a forum so I can kind of build a little community around the development. And I'm going to be releasing all my builds there for people to play as it goes. And definitely that means I can get a lot of feedback from the community saying, you know, they still say what works, what doesn't, what they hate, what they love, and definitely use that to build it. A lot of the changes I've made in my game so far have been from community feedback, people play testing it using Dungeon World. So that's definitely the way I'm going to go.
Yeah, you might never know. You might find your game is being played on some podcast that will name nameless.
I'd be down for it. I'll keep in touch with you.
Yeah, totally. So, like, I know we've been talking about your game a whole bunch, but, and I just want to say, is there any other games out there that you're probably pumped to see or play or have already been out? What other games haven't you played and or looking forward to playing in the future?
Well, I'm a little jealous that you got to play The Spirit of 77.
Isn't everybody?
Yeah. And I know they sent you to me, so I'd love to give
them a little Spirit of 77, yeah.
Apart from that, I don't know. I've been so busy with my own game. I'm kind of in a bit of a bubble.
Yeah,
I can't think of anything else beyond that. That's the only one that's come up on my radar so far.
Hey, Bob, look at that. You got name dropped back, so we're all good here. Full circle. Forget the first. All right, cool.
Yeah, full circle. That's what people have been saying about my game, too.
Yeah, it is. It's true. Yeah, that's right. Right back to the apocalypse. That's right. Excellent. All right. Here's the question. What's the next game that you're going to put it at?
It's going to be a high fantasy setting using the Apocalypse World system.
That's funny. That's good. But, so that's great. Is there anything else? Okay, if somebody's coming up starting new, I know that you're probably in the same boat at the moment with where you're going here on Kickstarter. Do you have any advice to somebody who would be wanting to make a game themselves but kind of feel like, it's not going to make it, I'm not going to be able to do it, whatever. Like, do you have any advice that you would give to them sort of that boosts their self-confidence and whatnot?
I don't know if there's anything that I could give to boost self-confidence. It's definitely a super hard thing to do, and a lot of people are ideas guys, and it's hard to make the step from being an ideas guy to being a good ideas guy and an actually do it guy.
Yeah, true. True.
So, the advice I could give, I guess, would be make sure you plan everything as much as you can, and make sure you have solid ideas, and make sure you talk to as many people as you can first. Because you may have all these great ideas in your head, but it's really, really what you're doing is you're making this for other people, not for yourself at the end of the day, because
right.
Everyone's going to be playing this, everyone's going to have different experiences with it. So you have to get as much feedback as possible, and that's something I've been doing with Broken World, is getting as much feedback as possible. And that's really what is making this successful for me, is getting that feedback and getting that input. And I know now that I'm going to make a great system because I've gotten
so many,
you know, all of these strangers telling me it's great so far. So, you know, you look for your positive reinforcement from the community, and that's definitely the way to go. Also, it doesn't hurt to be really good at art.
It doesn't hurt. Excellent. Cool. All right. Do you have anything else you want to tell our viewers?
I don't know.
I guess you've never seen us before, so you're kind of like, I don't know what your viewers are like, so. let's talk about your Kickstarter. So it's at Broken Worlds, right on Kickstarter, right? So at the moment, there's 5 days left. I think we just broke, 10K?
10770 is what we're at right now.
All right, great. So the game is already a go for all those people out there wondering, oh, okay, great. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot more stuff there. There's a lot more stuff on there, on your, I guess, extended goals or stretch goals, right?
Yes, we've got stretch goals to hit. So everyone dogpile right now. I think the next... I'll be happy if we hit the next two. Next one, I'll be happy no matter what. But if we hit the next two, that'd be amazing, because that's something that's going to be really great for the game and something everyone's going to want. Definitely, if you love, you know, micromanaging, city building, and if you really think that you might need resources to inspire you when you're playing the game, then the next two thresholds are going to be, you know, super important.
Great. Cool. All right. Well, I'll talk to you after the show is over there for a minute. As for everybody else, I want to thank you very much for coming up on the show.
Oh, thank you.
Great. And for everybody else out there on the internet, this will be posted, and we'll get back to Dream Askew eventually. I know it's been like weeks because we've been having a bunch of interviews, but you know, Gen Con just happened not too long ago. All those other people, I mean, everybody's whatever. But anyways, so yeah, stick around. You'll see some more of the rest of Dream Askew in a couple weeks. All right. And see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.